This is an ABC podcast. You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello. Well, The Country Hour continues its road trip across the Eyre Peninsula. I'm Cassie Huff, and today Brooke Nyendorf and I are in Kimber, South Australia's Ag Town of the Year. Now, Brooke, I have been blown away by the vibrancy and the life in this town. There's so much going on.
There definitely is. There is. I took you on a bit of a tour of Kimber this morning. I gave you a quick tour, and we checked out some of the sites. We went and saw the refurbished Galah, the big Galah here, and she's come up a treat. And lots of things happening in this town, which we are going to hear a lot more about on the program today.
Absolutely. We're at Workshop 26, which is a fantastic community initiative run by some local men and women. They're showcasing local arts and crafts and things like that. It's in an old tractor shed. So today we're in a big corrugated iron building. But I tell you what, it's the best looking tractor shed I've ever seen.
I think you described it as the prettiest tractor shed you've ever seen, which it definitely is.
There's festoon lighting, there's pianos, there's lots of floral displays. It's magnificent. So it's a great place for us to showcase South Australia's Ag Town of the Year, which is Kimber. And you'll be hearing from a lot of different people from the town over the next hour, including some local school children who were a big part of why the town actually received its recognition as Ag Town of the Year. And they've got quite a lot to say. They're a very active bunch, so a great future ahead for Kimber as well. But first and foremost, Kimber is an agricultural town, and right now farmers are reaping a much delayed crop, and the weather really hasn't spared this part of the Eyre Peninsula either. So I'm very grateful to Andrew Baldock for jumping off the header to chat with Brooke and I this afternoon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
So did you come into town to drop off a load?
Come in to pick up some parts, actually.
How are things looking on your place?
Yeah, it's an interesting harvest, to say the least. I think everyone's finding yields probably a little better than they'd expected, particularly on good soil. We've seen a lot of variation in rainfall across the district. But I guess, yeah, the weather's been an interesting one. There's very, very little cereals that were off before the rain came in. Those that were good quality before we started, and now falling numbers is the number of the day. So a lot of feed and GP around, very limited milling wheats at this stage. I mean, we've really only been going again for a few days, so we'll see what comes. But it doesn't look good at this stage as far as grades go, but I guess the yields are good and the base price is really good.
So that's really the saving grace, isn't it, that prices have held up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a long way back and you can sort of stop and count your losses, but if you like, but I guess the base price is better than probably most of us would have budgeted on, even at feed at the start of the year, and yields have been probably average or above, so yeah.
How concerning, though, is it looking forward, though, with fertiliser prices, fuel prices on the rise? Is that at all what people are thinking about at the moment, or is it still just fully on the crop?
I guess most of us are just worried about this next couple of weeks to get the crop off in case weather comes again. But, yeah, no doubt those elevated expenses for next year are a concern, and the cream on top of this crop would have been pretty handy. But I think all in all it'll be a profitable year, but, yeah, see what comes.
How long were you actually delayed?
It was probably nearly 3 weeks. We got going a little bit in between, and yeah, so there's been 2 or 3 rain events along the way, which is, it's probably just exacerbated it all. Sort of 70 to 120 mil in that month across the district, and yeah, I've certainly not seen anything like it since I've been back.
When you say yields are good, what sort of yields are you pulling off?
Well, we've repped anything from 1 tonne to 3 tonne on wheat. Break crops have generally been all right, but we've seen a huge amount of variation in rainfall in the district too. We probably saw 75 to 100 mil in variation in growing season rainfall. So some of those areas with the high rainfall and good water holding capacity have held up quite well, and some of the harder country with a bit less rain has perhaps struggled a little.
And what about quality? You've said quality's back, but will this area rep any milling grade wheat?
There has been some anecdotally come through. It's really hard to tell at this stage because people have only been going for a few days. There'll probably be pockets of areas that that perhaps were green when the first rain come through that we hope will have held up better. Yeah, unfortunately, those with the lower rainfall, those crops were finished earlier and are probably going to be harder hit.
Well, it's such a shame. I mean, it's sort of such a mixed bag, really. Like, it's good to at least be repping something when you've had drought years and you know what it's like to have nothing going through the back of the header. But
such
a comeback from what it could have been. And it's going to be an interesting scenario right across the country. Like, are you guys watching what's happening in New South Wales as well with crops underwater there?
Oh, yeah, it's an absolute mess over there. So I guess we're just thankful that we're getting a crop off and we really feel for those guys over there because... Yeah, wet drought's probably worse than an actual drought in some ways, but yeah.
Well, one last thing before I let you go. It has come out at the start of this week that after 6 years of consultation, the federal government has formally chosen Napandi near Kimber, your place, as the place to house the radioactive waste facility. Now, it's been a long road. There could still be a Supreme Court judicial review, but what is next for the site?
Well, I guess now they'll undertake some more site works. There'll be a lot of design work done and consultation work done within the community. Hope to see in the coming years some construction around roads and things. But there's a long way to go in this process. There's still a lot of regulatory approvals that need to be undertaken. Whilst this is an exciting step forward, there's still a long way to go for the community. But yes, it's exciting.
Well, thanks so much for your time today. I'll let you get back on the header. I know you're very busy and appreciate you stopping off to have a coffee and a bit of a chat with us.
No worries. Thanks, Cassie.
That was Andrew Baldock, who is a farmer in the Kimber area. He is in the middle of harvest, so we're grateful for him to stop by, Brooke, and have a bit of a chat.
Yeah, definitely. And just on that that rain side of things, on social media last night, I saw another Kimber farmer, good afternoon, Tim, if you tuned in, and he said... Basically, he was talking about the downgrades and what he potentially could have harvested before this rain come through and to what he is getting now. And he said basically what made it grow has destroyed it. So yeah. It's you know,
the
rain
with one hand and take with another.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. So, it's been one of those years, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And another man who is involved in this space is Steve Willis. He's a grain broker and a family and business support mentor. How are you dealing with your farmers? What sort of conversations are you having?
It's a real mixed bag across the Eyre Peninsula. There's some of the growers that are barely even started wheat. And the upper Eyre Peninsula is all quite affected with the rain events already, particularly in the Thevenard zone.
How are prices holding up?
The prices are exceptional. South Australia leads Australia in pricing pretty well of wheat, barley, canola. There's a real shipping squeeze on. There's a lot of boats booked around the corner coming, and grain's been delayed in transfers to fill contracts and things. And, yeah, there's a real opportunity out there for good pricing at the moment. I think it might... flatten off once the first few boats get filled and sail. I think things will settle down a little bit.
Well, we were at Ceduna yesterday and we could see two Viterra ships off the coast there. There wasn't enough grain yet for them to come in and load, so it does sound like it's been quite a slow year. I did read, though, I think Viterra was saying that they've taken in 1 million tonnes now, so things are getting moving.
Yeah, I did read that yesterday. It's starting to, everyone's starting to get into it. Lower EP is still reaping canola and barley. Middle EP have started wheat, and there's a bit of a mixed bag from high quality to APW, AAS, and then there's a lot of SFW and feed wheat around as well.
In your capacity as a Fab Scout, a family and business support mentor, how tough is this mentally for farmers in this area?
It is challenging because a lot of them had seen the high prices and potentially spent some of that income before they've got it, thinking it was going to be a great year. If you look at it in perspective, there is, like, canola's really, it's a record price. Barley's very, very solid, close to record price. And we're getting more for our low-grade grain than what we would in a normal season. If you put it in and look at the oyster industry in Coffin Bay, and they have had the Pom's virus spat problems and now can't sell their product and put in COVID as well. I think the ag sector is actually doing pretty good, and there's other industries that doing it a lot tougher, and yeah.
Steve, that's what was going to be my next question. Is you've worked a lot with the oyster growers, with the POM side of things and COVID. What are you saying to them now when this new issue has come up?
I've spoken to a few people just over the phone. I haven't gone and had face-to-face contacts, but there's a lot of staff that's already been put off. They're going to go into Christmas. Not a lot of people are going to have a lot of money. And COVID meant that people weren't eating their produce. So there's some tough times coming, and we've got to be supportive of all communities of Eyre Peninsula and different people, and look out for one another and just be there to have a listen and have a chat and look out for someone that's not doing so well.
That's definitely a good message to have. Steve Willis, grain broker and here in Kimber, as well as a family and business support program mentor. Thanks for joining us here on the Country Hour today.
No worries. Thank you.
We are here in Kimber today for the South Australian Country Hour. It's 16 minutes past 12.
Ah, summer. The perfect time to dive into a world of entertainment on ABC iView. With favourite shows like Rosehaven, Doctor Who, or Gruen.
We begin with huge news.
I bet it's amazing.
And something to suit every mood, like Universe with Brian Cox, Big Deal, or Total Control.
So much action and intrigue.
It's all yours!
All your summer streaming on ABC iView.
You and me in the summertime.
You're listening to Cassie Huff on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
I'm broadcasting live from Kimber today in the heart of the Eyre Peninsula. It's been a great trip across the Eyre Peninsula so far, as the harvest is very much coming off in this, or the crop is very much coming off in this part of the world. But we'll head down to Millicent now, because in an emotionally charged council meeting, Wattle Range councillors unanimously voted to keep the Millicent sale yards open, as Megan Hughes reports.
Around 70 people came to the town hall last night to have their say on the future of the facility, council deciding to host the special meeting in response to hearing locals' concern. Millicent stock agent John Chay says he's pleased with the decision.
Pretty wrapped, actually. It went very well, and the 80-plus crowd was just, they erupted at the unanimous decision with applause, and yeah, everyone's pretty happy.
What was the atmosphere in the room like last night? I know this has been a contentious issue over the last year or so.
The speakers spoke very well. Like, there was four representations. The Millicent Business Association, they spoke very well. There's two of them. And, the mood in the room was all positive, but nervous at the same time.
The council is budgeting $984,000 for the initial stage of the project, which will be to help the sale yards meet safe work requirements. It's expected more work will be completed in the future. John Chay again.
They decided that it was probably going to cost as much to mothball it as what it was to upgrade it and keep the service going for the Wattle Range ratepayers.
What does this mean going forward in terms of the upgrades? Where to from here? Has council spoken much to you yet?
Not since the meeting, but there's upgrades we need to do on a couple of ramps and just to make them WorkSafe compliant.
Wattle Range Council Chief Executive Ben Gower says this decision has been a long time in the making.
This has been an incredibly difficult decision for council for a number of years. So I've been working through the issue of the sale yards for the 5 years I've been here. About 3 years ago, where council commissioned the report that was tabled tonight by SED Consulting, we had a town hall meeting with over 200 people turned up to talk about the outcome of the report. And it was full of the same passion and the same emotion. And the councillors at that point in time actually decided to close the yards shortly afterwards. And that was the first decision. Then with time, and as working groups got together and started exploring different solutions, they deferred that decision. And then they deferred the decision again, which just demonstrates how difficult a decision this has always been.
Ferner cattle farmer Steve Bellinger says the sale yards are crucial to his business.
Well, it'll make our cattle enterprise carry on. Otherwise, distance would have made our business unprofitable. That is our 100% livelihood is the Millicent sale yards. We sell there 100%.
John Chay says the site offers more than just economic importance to the community.
It'd mean that you lose a training platform for the young ones coming through. I know myself, like I started auctioneering there and being a stock agent there. Myself and even elders have got a couple of young blokes, and it's just a great training, you know, platform for them.
And also a place of business, I imagine.
Yeah, it is. And a place of social gathering, and everyone that comes there, they enjoy that day out.
Millicent stock agent John Che ending that report from Megan Hughes. Speaking of markets, so we'll head across to John Traeger, who has the results from the Dublin sheep and cattle sale.
Good afternoon. Quality was hard to find as agents offered 4,200 lambs and 2,300 sheep to the usual trade buying group and a small gallery of restockers. Few pens of ideal trade lambs were presented. However, restockers, competition and trade support for heavy lambs saw prices lift across the market by from $5 to $8 per head on average, with mutton pricing also showing another modest lift in prices. Light young lambs sold from $102 to $146 as light trade weights ranged from $138 to $160. The few trade weights sold from $150 to $202 per head. Extreme heavyweights sold from $208 to $220. Light older lambs sold from $150 to $155. Light trade weights ranged from $166 to $180, with heavy weights selling from $200 to $250 per head. Light hoggets sold from $104 to $140, as heavy weights ranged from $134 to a top of $206. Light ewes sold from $132 to $148, with heavy weights ranging from $154 to $165, with a mixed selection of wethers selling from $140 to $170 per head. Young Merino ewes sold from $132 to a top of $202, with rams ranging from $120 to $170 per head. Meanwhile, in the cattle market, numbers reduced this week as agents offered 185 live weight cattle and 30 open oxen calves. Quality was again extremely mixed. However, competition was good from the usual trade buyers, feeders and restockers. Prices remained generally firm for type, breed and condition, with ideally finished younger cattle in the minority. Vealer steers sold from $620 to $632, with vealer heifers selling from $574 to $642. Medium weight yearling steers sold from $480 to $574, with similar heifers selling from $458 to $542. Heavy yearling steers sold from $514 to $548, with heavyweight heifers ranging from $470 to $520 a kilo. Grown steers sold a wide range from $408 to $520, with grown heifers selling from $450 to $514. Light cows sold from $220 to $290, with heavy cows selling from $280 to $330 a kilo. Yearling bulls sold a range from $260 to a top of $504 a kilo. This is John Traeger at the South Australian Livestock Exchange for MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service and the Country Hour.
Thanks for that, John, and the Mount Gambier Cattle Sale Report from Peter Kerr.
Good afternoon, Cassie. This is the Mount Gambier Cattle Report for the 1st of December. Numbers rose as agents charted 1,484 head of live weight and open auction cattle. These sold to the usual field of trade and processor buyers, with feeders and restockers also active over the offering. Quality continues to be good, with some excellent vealers coming forward, along with plenty of latent conditioning in the bullock pens. The market sold a softer rate this week, as it was a fall of 10 to 15 cents a kilogram over most categories. Vealer steers to the trade lost 14 cents as they made from 490 to 550 with similar heifers, making from 465 to 534. Feeders are active here from 480 to 541 cents on steers and on heifers, from 488 to 530, with the restocker activity from 540 to 608 cents on steers and up to 544 cents a kilogram on the heifers. Yearling steers to the trade lost 11 cents as they made from 420 to 500, with feeders active from 452 to 525 cents a kilogram. Yearling heifers to the trade made from 434 to 538, with feeders operating from 403 to 504 cents. Grown steers and bullocks to the trade ranged from 390 to 490, with feeder activity from 422 to 530 cents a kilogram. Grown heifers to the processors made from 410 to 486 cents, with feeders active to 430, as manufacturing steers returned from 355 to 410. Heavy cows eased 12 cents, they made from 330 to 382, with a lot of types making from 270 to 333, with feeder activity from 305 to 356 cents a kilogram. A small offering of bulls made from 298 to 346 cents. This has been Peter Kerr from the MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thanks for that, Peter. Now we have to find out the all-important weather. I'm sitting in Kimber in a rather warm shed, to be honest. I'd say we'd probably know it's about the 34 degrees, I think, that it's meant to reach Kimber today. But Vince Rollins from the Bureau of Meteorology has the exact figures. Good afternoon.
Hello, Cassie.
So how are things looking across the state? And indeed, why not get an update for Kimber as well?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, Kimber is going to be pretty hot there today. 34 degrees is the forecast max. I'm not quite sure what the temperature is there at the moment. But, yeah, Coltana, a bit further east, is sitting at 28. So I would imagine that you'd be sitting around that sort of 30, you know, high 20, 30 degree mark at the moment. And, yeah, things certainly expected to warm up during the afternoon. It'll be a bit different. Like, just looking at some of the November stats for Kimber, it's averaged 24.3 degrees over November, which is about 3 degrees below its average for November. So yeah, it has been a bit cooler across there, and I think that has a lot to do with the amount of rainfall that they've seen across the Kimber region during November, where they ended up with 72 millimetres against its normal average of about 23. So, yeah, all that rainfall certainly had an effect on temperatures, but certainly dry conditions there today and going to be a pretty hot one, as I mentioned, at 34 degrees. But I will see things cooling down a little bit over the next few days as we get those southerly winds pushing through. So at the moment, we've just got a trough sitting over the east and extending into the northwest of the state, and that's just slowly going to continue to move northwards, and it's going to sit over the northern parts of the state as we head towards the weekend and early next week. So not a lot of weather initially associated with the trough, and maybe a little bit of thunderstorm activity over the eastern districts today. Just extends into the Flinders and northeast pastoral district tomorrow, and then just continues to track northwards. And not a lot of rainfall with the thunderstorms, maybe a little bit around over the next couple of days, but as we get into Friday and then Saturday, most of the thunderstorm activity will be dry, but then a little bit of rainfall is expected over the north, associated with a bit of an upper system moving through as well, which drags a bit of tropical moisture into the northern parts of the state. But yeah, just looking at a bit further south, we will see a high pressure system moving across south of the Bight, so we will see those southerly winds continuing about southern parts today, and then just gradually extending further north. So we will see some cooling right across the state as we head towards the latter part of the weekend. But certainly over the next few days, some very hot conditions expected over the north of the state. That does slowly contract northwards, as I mentioned, and should see some cooling conditions extending throughout, probably around Sunday into Monday. And we do have just a small area of severe heat wave conditions over the next few days, just up in the far northwest of the state. But yeah, generally not a lot of weather, as I said. We do see a little bit of shower activity coming into the far north of the state over the weekend, but that starts to contract northwards during Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday as well. But further south, really not looking at too much weather about, so remaining fairly dry. But even with the shower and thunderstorm activity, we're not expecting a lot of rainfall with that, Cassie. Just generally up to a couple of millimetres with the showers. Could see maybe up to 10 millimetres with the thunderstorm activity, particularly over the next couple of days. But as I mentioned, as we head towards the weekend, we are expecting those thunderstorms, particularly on Friday, to produce not much rainfall, so fairly dry. So, yeah, looking at generally just things starting to cool down over the north, and yeah, a little bit of shower and thunderstorm activity over the north over the next few days as well, Cassie.
For that, Vince, I guess we should start to expect some warm weather. It is the first day of summer after all.
It is, yes. Yeah. So, you know, those temperatures up in the north getting into the 40s, I mean, it's nothing that we're not expecting at this time of year. We usually do see some pretty hot temperatures this time of year.
Thanks for that. Vince Rollins from the Bureau of Meteorology. In the upper western, or the upper west of the western districts, it will be sunny tomorrow morning. There is a chance of a thunderstorm in the southwest in the afternoon and early evening. There are temperatures are going to fall to between 18 and 25 degrees, but the daytime temperatures will reach about 33 to 40 degrees, quite warm. The lower western will be partly cloudy. There is a slight chance of a shower in the morning and afternoon, and possibly a thunderstorm there in the afternoon and evening as well. Overnight, we'll get down to 18 to 23 degrees, but the daytime temperatures will get up to the mid to high 30s. It's coming up to 12:30.
The Country Hour. For more stories from across the country, go to abc.net.au/rural. On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill, this is Cassie Huff. Cassie Huff.
Hi, I'm so glad you could join me today on my Eyre Peninsula Odyssey. I found myself in Kimber today. It's famous for the Big Galah. It's just had a facelift. It's also famous for being the town halfway across Australia. And now it's also famous for being the Ag Town of the Year. It's quite a lofty title. It's well deserved after spending a little bit of time here now. I'm reliably informed that the judges did find the Ag Town of the Year application from Kimber to be outstanding. And it's quite obvious when you move around the town here just how much community spirit and vibrancy there is here. Now, Brooke Neindorf and I are at Workshop 26, which is a community creative hub. It's an old tractor shed. It's a corrugated iron building, massive building, and you can still see hallmarks of what was once a mechanic and a few different trades in here beforehand, but it's now rather beautiful. It's the prettiest and best smelling mechanic shed I think I've ever seen, Brooke.
Yeah, that's right. They've done a fantastic job, the Workshop 26 ladies, to get it up to scratch from what it was. I think they said it was 90 years as a mechanic's shed at some point over here in Kimber. So they've got their Christmas markets coming up on Saturday on the weekend, so I thought we'd give a little plug for those.
But it is the start of December. It's time for it.
We're into it, and Mariah Carey will be out very shortly with, belting out a bit of Christmas music too. But yeah, we are here in Kimber, and Cass, I'm so glad that you got to come over and experience Kimber firsthand.
It's a fantastic town, and in the next half hour you're going to hear just why Kimber was named South Australia's Ag Town of the Year. But first, we'll find out what's happening in news with Claire Campbell. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cassie. I'm jealous of your little road trip. But in the news today, one of South Australia's largest task force investigations has been launched, looking into the unsolved murders of Robert Atkins, Jeff Mundy and Trevor King, all believed to be connected to Adelaide's methamphetamine scene. Mr Atkins and Mr Mundy's bodies have not been found, but Mr King's body was found last year and was treated as a suicide, but it's now believed he was given a deliberate overdose. Police Commissioner Grant Stevens says his powers as the State Emergency Coordinator are not affected after legislation granting him functions under the Emergency Response Act expired today. One of the US President's top advisers has predicted that China will re-engage with the Morrison government on Australia's terms after the country hit multiple Australian products with formal and informal trade sanctions as the relationship deteriorated. And a new report from the Australian Energy Regulator shows South Australia's average annual power bills have gone down by $422 in the past 4 years. I'll be back at 1 o'clock with more ABC News.
Thanks for that, Claire. Now, as I've been saying, we're in the town that is halfway across Australia, the town of Kimber, and it was named Ag Town of the Year for 2022. And one man who has been quite involved in that program, well, that accolade, is the Mayor Dean Johnson. He joins me now. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Cassie. Welcome to Kimber.
On this rather warm day.
It is, but it's a bit of a relief for us, I think. It's nice to get some decent harvest weather for our farmers. It's certainly been throwing everything at us 2021, hasn't it?
It's quite remarkable that you're only really getting into the 30s at the start of December.
It really is, yes. We're certainly due for some warmer weather, and hopefully we can get that grain off as soon as we can.
And in a year that's thrown a lot at the ag community, we had not enough rain and then too much rain, it's really all come at the wrong time. Kimber did get that real boost with being named Ag Town of the Year. Now, I understand you pulled out all the stops to get this award.
Well, we certainly did. We didn't leave anything to chance. We had some fantastic judges come out and complete our judging in Rob Karen and Mayor Erica Vickery as well. So she's the chair of SARA. The judges came out and we really did lay it on fairly thick, I've got to say. But there's so much about Kimber that's easy to brag about, to be honest. We've got so many community groups. There are just about every individual in our community volunteers in one way, shape or another. And the community really came together, and I think our people shone through, and we ended up taking out this prestigious award. So it's really great.
And I think it was, I think he could have been considered the underdogs, really. Would you say that?
Well, we like to think of ourselves as the underdogs all the time, I suppose. But look, Kimber's used to batting above its average, to use a cricketing term. Our small population really belies the amount of awards and great things that have come our way. So I think we're a community full of innovators and volunteers, and it really shines through. And there's this prestigious award was really proud for every one of our citizens, I think.
I say underdog because the award went to Cleve 2 years ago. So there was a bit of a thought that it wouldn't come back to the Eyre Peninsula for some time, but it did. And I was wondering, oh, we've had a little dog.
Speaking of underdogs.
Wants to hop on the radio too. but given that... Cleve has won this before. It's one of Kimber's great rival towns. Have you had a conversation now with Cleve as to how you can capitalise on this accolade?
Yeah, I guess those conversations will be happening over the next few days. We've got the Eyre Peninsula Local Government Association in town tomorrow and Friday. I have touched base with Mayor Cameron down at Cleve. And I think it really solidifies the Upper Eyre Peninsula as a key agricultural strategic vision place. So I guess we really need to build on that. And I think, to have it twice in the same region is pretty spectacular. And, we're certainly looking to partner with Cleve and make sure our agricultural roots are recognised.
How is Kimber going to reconcile this great agricultural region, the Ag Town of the Year, with the announcement on Monday that Kimber, Nepandi out of Kimber, will be the site for the nuclear facility as well? How are you going to reconcile those two elements?
Yeah, well, I think they go side by side, to be honest. It is a new industry for Kimber. It gives us some opportunities to have some jobs that aren't reliant on our rainfall, which has been a key plank of Council's strategic vision for a long time now. We really need to reverse this slow decline of our population that's happened over a number of years now, so it fits in well with that. But the radioactive waste conversation is one plank in the conversation about Kimber. There are so many things that are happening here. That's one of them. We can't ignore that. And it's a big thing for our community. However, there's just so much going on that it's just one small part of the conversation.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to come down to Workshop 26 and have a chat. This is one of the great community initiatives, I guess, that won Kimber the Ag Town of the Year Award.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Cassie.
That was Mayor Dean Johnson speaking about some of the great community initiatives and elements to the community that have made Kimber the Ag Town of the Year. And we're going to hear from some of the people who have been behind the initiatives in this town to make it Ag Town of the Year. Brooke, you've been following some of the initiatives here in Kimber for some time.
Yeah, that's right. There's been lots of things happening with the local Ag Bureau, with Big Fig, and some fantastic initiatives happening. Another one that's a relatively new one is called Our Town, and we're joined by two of the members of this, Megan Leanett and Aaron Lister. Thanks for joining us today, ladies. First of all, Megan, we'll come to you. Tell us what Our Town is.
Our Town is an initiative that's come from a philanthropic group called the Faye Fuller Foundation, and they did some research and coordinated with the university and health in department. And from their research, they found that country regions don't have the services or resources to be able to deal with the actual needs around mental health. So part of their project is to provide small communities with funding to be able to come from the community up and provide preventative measures. And it's about, so we were very lucky, one of four communities to receive $3 million over the next 10 years to work on and work with the community, coming up with different ideas that we can test and then see what works in the prevention of a mental health space. So it's not about providing service. It's about testing different things. We've got some, you know, connecting people in different ways, working out how we can provide services within our own community and support structures as well. So it's such an exciting initiative that we're very lucky. We worked very hard last year doing a lot of research within the community and worked really hard, and it just paid off by the end of the year. We were stoked, so it's good.
Erin, we'll come to you and just tell us about some of the services that our town has planned for Kimber.
I was going to say services is probably the wrong word to be using, because we're actually not going to be any sort of actual services. It's actually about, like Megan said, it's about being community led and owned. So far this year we've employed people as part of the program, and we've employed seven people with up to 85 hours, so we're sharing some roles. So we've got a diverse amount of people from across our community to be able to, I suppose, speak for the community. But then along with that, we will be and have been going out to community and running different events or workshops to be able to be in the prevention space of to help people towards better mental health and wellbeing. But there's a few groups that are starting to form now as well. It might sound a bit random, but we've got a crochet group forming, we've got an eight ball competition happening, we've got a men's group that's walking once a week. So we're starting to bring people together to connect in healthy ways, so that they can actually, when things do go wrong or people are struggling, that we've actually got a support network in our community to be able to help people before it gets to the point where someone needs a service.
And those kind of things, a crochet group or an eight ball group or a walking group, that can include everyone in the town, because we often talk about sport being a big part of a regional town where people can get together, but not everyone wants to go out and play sport. So having those, I guess, those opportunities for them to join in elsewhere in the town is important.
And that's just it. It's about definitely connecting different cohorts of the community together. From, you know, say in the eight ball competition, we've got a youth group in the competition. We've also got people that are coming out and playing a game that they've never or haven't played for years, and they're coming out of the woodwork. We've got new people to town that have never been out to Buckleboo, and they're going out to play an eight ball competition, and then they suddenly meet all these awesome people that live out there. So it is about connecting different cohorts of the community together.
How important is it to have something like this in a town like Kimber? But as you said, there's three other towns that have got it. There's Cummins, Ceduna, and Kangaroo Island. So for a regional town, how important is something like this for your area?
Oh, I think it's massively important to have something in the prevention space. Through some of our research last year and what we've been learning, I think it's only 2% of money that goes into the prevention space for preventing poor mental health. So to be able to be in a community and do things from the ground up, instead of different initiatives coming in and telling us what we need to do, it's actually about from the community and what we can do for ourselves and be able to help ourselves. And thankfully we were funded by the Faye Fuller Foundation to be able to do that. So it's massively important, because there's a gap in mental health. We don't have psychologists or, you know, people in the field and services here, so we need to be able to do it for ourselves, so we don't have to also travel as well, so people can stay in town and help each other basically at the end of the day.
And Megan, what are your crochet skills like? Are you part of that group?
Unfortunately, I teach on those days, but no, I'm definitely loving seeing the eight ball comp get started. The diversity of people that are playing together, communicating, connecting in different ways, and then that leads to other opportunities for connection as well. So loving seeing that happen. But yeah, that's only a tip of the iceberg of what's to come. So really looking forward to the next 10 years.
Well, Megan Lena, Erin Lister from Our Town Kimber, thank you very much for joining us here today on the Country Hour to tell us a little bit about this program. We look forward to seeing how it goes forward into the future.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Cassie Huff, that was some of the members of Our Town Kimber. We are here today in Kimber, the Ag Town of the Year for South Australia, and it is coming up to 1:45.
If you've been through a disaster, like an earthquake, a fire or flood, you'll know they're overwhelming. I'm Dr. Kate Brady, and I work with communities after emergencies and research what happens in the months and years after these events. Join me for After the Disaster, a podcast to help you find your way through and beyond these life-changing moments.
Most people who are not in the community don't really understand the experience of disaster.
Find out on the ABC Listen app, the ABC Emergency website, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello. We've been talking all things Kimber this afternoon on the Country Hour, and the town was named Ag Town of the Year, and one of the big initiatives that I think helped get the town over the line was the students' involvement and the school's involvement, because they've come up with a very student-driven, very important contribution to not just the school but also to the community. And to explain a little bit more, I'm joined by Kimber Area School Teacher Kristen Wietra. Good afternoon. I'm well, thanks. Might need you to pull your mic up a bit closer to your mouth there. There we go. it's a bit hard with these microphones. Now, can you tell me what is this project that really impressed the judges for the Ag Town of the Year?
Yeah, okay. So last year for Humanities, we were looking at ways that the kids could get involved with their community. And a group of boys decided it'd be great to have an ag course at the school. So they started a project looking at how they could make that happen. They went out into the community, talked to people, talked to the school principal, and before we knew it, they had a big group of local businesses and farmers, just community groups, sitting at a meeting, and they were pitching their idea. And from there, we started a committee, and this year the kids got their ag course at the school.
I find that remarkable that you didn't actually have one beforehand when you're in such a prolific agricultural area.
Yeah, well, I think like Cleve Area School just down the road, they've got a pretty big ag program. But yeah, the kids at Kimber, they really wanted to have something similar at their school. So they got out there and made it happen.
It sounds like it took a fantastic amount of work and a lot of, I guess, purpose and drive as well. When you've got students who are taking so much ownership of their learning, what does that result in?
For the kids, it's been great. It's been great to see kids who are probably a little bit disengaged with schooling and their education. I know Thursdays and Fridays, that's ag days, and they look forward to coming to school on those days. And to have kids who probably exhibited challenging behaviours in other subject areas, for me at least, to have them in my ag course and they're engaged, I love having them there. I think they love coming to their ag lessons, and we get out in the paddock and kick rocks, and we've got a little bit of stock out there, and local farmers have been coming out and helping the kids out and getting involved. It's just been a win for everyone.
Sounds like it. And do you think it could actually keep students who may not go all the way through to year 12 in school?
I think for sure, and it's certainly going to keep some of our Kimber kids at Kimber Area School, which initially, with the talk around the school and with the teachers, that was one of our sort of main aims, was to get these kids engaged and get them enjoying coming to school at Kimber and wanting to stay in school at Kimber and then in Kimber after school.
And so how have you incorporated the agriculture elements that the students have wanted to see throughout the entire curriculum at the school?
To be honest, it's been challenging for me. We've started liaising with Clave a little bit because obviously they've got a lot of experience with delivering an agricultural-based curriculum. But we sort of started off the year with fencing, and local businesses donated all the fencing gear and troughs. And that project, it's into the tens of thousands of dollars that the locals have contributed. But as far as the curriculum, we involved the mass curriculum with that, where the kids got to measure up their fence, work out what they needed, get prices, come up with a price for the actual fence. Obviously the gear was donated, so we didn't have to use their pricing.
The budget was looking pretty good.
But yeah, and then so later on in the year we've looked at careers in ag, and they've had all sorts of people from around local businesses come in and just explore the careers that would be on offer to them if they decided to stay in Kimber. And then we've looked at cropping and livestock and all of that sort of stuff can involve the science curriculum, business and economics, design and technology. There's
everything.
There's just so much of the curriculum that can be attached to agriculture. And obviously the kids are more interested in it. So we feel like we're probably delivering more of the curriculum outcomes just because they're engaged with what they're learning about.
Absolutely. It sounds like a fantastic initiative. This is Christian Wietra, a teacher at the Kimber Area School, explaining the ag program that was developed by the students, really. Well, maybe not the program, but the initiative that came about from the students. So I'd like to meet some of these students who were so proactive. Good afternoon. Can you introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Max Hill. I live on a farm just here in Kimber. And, yeah, really excited about this ag program. It's been good so far.
Absolutely.
I'm Scarlett Hunt. I also live on a farm, and I've really enjoyed this ag program so far.
I'm Acia Caswell, and I've also enjoyed it, and I also live on a farm just out of Kimber.
So you're all pretty keen on your farming. So whose idea was it to go to businesses and get an ag program going? Looks like it was yours.
I don't know. There was three of us boys that really were pretty passionate about getting an ag program here in Kimber. Anyway, we just got our ideas together and thought about it. It's got Mr. Wietra. He got it started for us, get to the principal and all of that. So, yeah, he drived it for us, got our idea started. So. Yeah.
And what does it mean to you to see the school really take your idea up and run with it?
Yeah, it's awesome. I didn't think they would actually do it. But, the idea just flowed, and Mr. Wietra got it started for us, and, yeah, it's been exciting. So, yeah.
What's your favourite part, Scarlett, about the program?
At the start of the year, I really enjoyed everyone, from the community coming in and talking to us about just what they do and, yeah.
Absolutely. And Acia, are you hoping to do agriculture through the rest of your schooling?
Hopefully, because it sounds fun and just getting out in the environment and learning everything. So.
Now, I understand you've had some livestock donated, some sheep, is that right?
Yes, people have been coming along and being very helpful with donating sheep for us.
So does this mean you can now go to Adelaide for the weather competition?
Not too sure. Okay. I have to ask the teacher.
There's a lot of work that goes into it. What's been some of the hardest parts about having this ag plot now?
I'm not really sure, but our budget probably has been one of them.
That's a true farmer.
Yeah. We've had a lot of donations, which has helped. If we didn't have these donations from farmers and businesses, we wouldn't have got it started. So, we're just really fortunate to have them people here in Kimber.
So what are your plans next year for the ag plot?
Well, we hope to get a shearing shed down on the paddock or even a classroom down there so we can get, just a classroom started down there. So, yeah.
Oh, well, that will be music to the ears of graziers who are crying out for shearers. We've got the next generation of shearers and shed hands perhaps coming through.
Yeah.
Is that something you're keen on?
I don't mind it. Yeah, I've been trying to learn about it. It's always good to learn new things. So, yes, awesome. Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking time out of your school day. I'm sorry it was tough to come down to school, come and say hi to us, but really appreciate it. Great to hear your insights. I can't wait to hear how it goes. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Some students from Kimber Area School there speaking about the work that they did to get an ag program up and running in Kimber Area School. It really was student-driven by the sounds of things, and hopefully it will keep students who perhaps may have left school as well in school learning more about what goes on, not just in agriculture, but seeing how lots of things can apply to different careers. It sounds like maths was involved, design and technology was involved, science obviously was involved as well. So it sounds like a great program. And I think that was one of the pillars of Kimber's application to become the Ag Town of the Year. Now, we are almost out of time, but finally today, I just thought I'd touch base again with some more farmers, or one farmer indeed, to just get a sense of how the year is going at Peter Wolford's place. Good afternoon.
G'day, Cassie. How are you going?
I'm well, thanks. So we've heard a lot about better yields than expected, but much lower quality than hoped for.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Andrew summed it up pretty well before, but certainly probably out of Buckleberts, the yields are probably a little bit lower because it was a lot less rainfall. But look, quality's been impacted greatly from, you know, feed weight up to GP, but we've just got to get the crop off now.
What is it like for a low rainfall area? Like, you guys are not used to having to deal with too much rain, really.
No, that's right. And I think up until the end of July, it was looking terrific. And then we only had 10 millimetres in August and 1 millimetre in September. So we knew we were in a lot of trouble, and the crop certainly packed up. And we just couldn't get that rain to finish it. You know, the spring rain is always important, but of course we got a lot of it now, and there's a lot of green stuff out there we're going to have to deal with as well.
And so in terms of what you're pulling off, yield and quality-wise, how are things looking?
Well, the yield is going to be about average for us. You know, we've got some really good stuff on hills, on loamy soil, but in the flats they're pretty poor. And, of course, the crop colour is quite remarkable. We've got plenty of black-looking crop, you know, where the crop has actually died off and the rain has come on it really turns it into a black colour.
And are you shot and sprung as well? Are you?
Yeah, we're running the falling numbers of our stuff is between probably 180 and 210, but Buckleby, most of them are between the 180, between 80 and 200, so it's certainly shot wheat.
So what that means, if you aren't following farming, is that when the grain absorbs a lot of moisture, it then dries out and loses a lot of weight, and that's a lot of what the quality and the weight.
Yeah, well, what really happens is the falling numbers, the alpha amylase in the grain has an enzyme, has a lot of activity, and when that's high in activity, downgrades your quality. And so that's what the falling numbers machine tests, and it gives you a number. If you're under 300, you're in trouble.
Yeah, there's a lot of numbers under 300.
Yes,
have you got any 300 wheat this year?
Yeah, look, we did. We'd probably had a quarter rep before the rain, but since then it's all been downgrades. So.
And we know that the Kimber has been selected as the site for the nuclear facility. It was pretty much on the cards, but today, oh sorry, not today, on Monday, it was formally announced by the federal government that Napandi near Kimber would house the radioactive waste facility. How do you think the town will move forward now, knowing this?
Look, it is hard. I mean, because, you know, we're certainly disappointed the decision was made, but we certainly were expecting that it was going to be made. But I guess for me, it's a bitter pill to swallow that, you know, we're passionate about agriculture. We were named the Agricultural Town of the Year last week. And that's one of the major reasons myself and so many others are standing up opposing a nuclear waste dump, and in particular intermediate level waste, to have on farming land when, you know, agriculture here provides probably $60 million a year. That's just the grain. Whereas this facility is only going to give $20 million over 100 years. So for me, it's a no-brainer that with only 4.5% of farming, cropping land in South Australia, that it should be somewhere else. So look, we're certainly getting legal advice, and we are going to pursue all options. There's no doubt about that.
Well, thanks so much for your time today. I'll let you get back on the header because I know you had to take some time out to come and speak to us today. It's a very busy time of year, so thanks for taking the time.
No worries, Cassie. Great to have you guys here.
That was Farmer Peter Wolford there speaking about what's happening in the region around Kimber. Now, that's about all we have time for today, but Sonia Feldhoff will be up next on your ABC local radio. Good afternoon, Sonia.
Hey, Cassie. I tell you what, if you're looking for a job in South Australia at the moment, there are certain industries that are desperately short. We've just looked at the statistics, the Bureau of Statistics figures, and there are many skilled jobs out there that require some workers. So if you're looking for a change of career, listen up after one and we'll tell you what industries those areas are from. And also, we're going to take a look at mental health. And we know in regional areas where you are in particular, faced with bushfires in particular, that is a big issue. We started this yesterday. We're going to continue that discussion today in terms of mental health and community resilience.
Thanks so much for that, Sonia. Lots more coming up on your local radio. We've had a very warm welcome here in Kimber, both literally and figuratively. Brooke, it's been a great day, and we'll move on now to the Eastern Air Peninsula, to Lucky Bay tomorrow. But right now, it's coming up to news time. It's 1 o'clock.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.